Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:08 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is August 17th. The S&P 500 was up in very minor territory today, but it was a new closing high and closing in on the peak from back in February. Obviously, there's a little reticence to be the first to pay 3,400 for the index when everybody knows what happened the last time it got up to these levels. So it's reasonable to expect that we get some consolidation or at least a pause around these levels, but we're still in a liquidity-rich environment. And we are starting to see that people are now looking at the prospect for recovery. So, for example, L Brands popped on the upside in here today. General Motors was also among the best performers. Now, it is hard to make a very convincing bullish argument for General Motors, but it is considered, I think, by some at least, to be a company that the US government is not about to allow to go bust, and it has at least held the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it's now back above its trend mean. Then, of course, we had some really quite significant strength in the technology sector again. Nvidia continues to accelerate higher. It was up another $30 in here today, and considerably more now than doubling since March. So this is a spectacular move, and the acceleration has not ended yet. If the first clear downward dynamic is likely to mark a peak of at least near-term significance. When we zoom in and look at the daily chart, we are presented with a series of small ranges, one above another, and at least a larger reaction than the most recent would be required to even begin to question that this isn't still a clear momentum-driven move. When we look at the NASDAQ, it's been the clear outperformer, and it pushed on to a new closing high in here today. When we then think about the Russell 2000, which has been lagging, then it has broken on the upside about a week ago and been consolidating in the region of 1600. The transportation index took a lot of beating back in the early part of the year, but it is now right back at the upper side of the range that prevailed for most of 2019. So again, this is a natural area where we might anticipate that there could be some consolidation, but it's got plenty of room in which to consolidate. Now, when we then look at the other side of the Pacific, Chinese market was up in robust form in here today. The PBOC has injected additional liquidity into the market, so that is certainly helping equity investors to be more enthused. When we then just think about the fact that the two big downward dynamics we saw in July, there was no follow-through. So the market has been able to steady. I was shaken out of the market, and that does not appear to have been the correct decision in the short term, but it is still right at the upper side of this range. It's going to need to follow through on the upside and sustain a breakout in order to reassert the recovery. But it is so far holding that move above 4,500. And that is the completion of a five-year range. The proximity of the peak from back in 2015 may not offer more than temporary resistance, considering the acceleration that took place to get to that peak in the first place, and also the amount of ranging that's taken place below 4,500. When we think about the Hong Kong market, well, the Hang Seng is right in the region of the trend mean. It hasn't quite yet been able to break the medium-term downtrend, but at least it's holding the sequence of higher reaction lows off the nadir in March. Then when we think about Japan, the Nikkei is still pausing below the 24,000 level, and the big question for investors will be the willingness of the Bank of Japan to come in and try and derail the continued strength that we see in the yen. The clear sequence of lower rally highs here is a picture of dollar underperformance. We've also seen that there's been a very clear willingness from the Bank of Japan to step in and derail any major attempt to devalue, bid up the price of the yen. So they're quite likely to move in and try and knock it back down again when it gets to 104. One thing we've seen in Europe, which has not really yet been evident in Japan, has been the ability of the European stock market to rally despite the strength in the currency. Now, the euro was also in positive territory in here today, and European equities were also mildly in positive territory, but still pausing, and they have been pausing now for approximately 10 weeks in the region of the trend mean. I do think that Europe is potentially going to benefit more than it has done for quite a while because of the clear institutional change within the EU administration. There is the abandoning of the fiscal straitjacket, the willingness to try and provide more liquidity to the places where it is really required on the periphery. Those are very significant new developments that should help to support the market. But the big question then is just how willing will Europe be to allow the currency to continue to rally? It was in mildly positive territory today. We continue to see it pausing below the 120 area. And I think we're probably going to see a clear attempt to push it through the 120 area in the not so distant future. Will the ECB then become more aggressive in introducing additional supply to the market? That's a big question. They may not, but if they're not going to do that, we're going to have to see additional stimulative measures, because the export sector that Europe heavily relies on is going to be impacted by the strength of the currency. When we flip it around and look at the dollar index, I think the most important point is the complete inability of the dollar to hold a rally. That we had two little pops on the upside in the first half of August. There's been no follow through. This reaction in the downtrend has been even shallower than the pop we had in June. There's still a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, but I think this is a clear break of trend, and it might be a while before we see that overextension unwound. Gold prices then are continuing to firm from the $1,900 area. So it's taking its cue both from the fact that the dollar remains under pressure, that there is the clear prospect of competitive devaluation because there is no country wants a strong currency right now. Then we have the additional point that there is the willingness for governments not only to try to devalue their currencies, but then we're also seeing that they are attempting to stretch the maturities on their bonds. That is only going to further raise the heckles of bond investors, and it raises the additional question about the willingness of governments to in fact pay back their debt in a currency that is even remotely close to the value that it had when people originally buy the bonds. Then Warren Buffett went out and bought some Barrick Gold in the last quarter. He's been exiting some of the banks. Barrick Gold popped on the upside in here today, so completely erased the pullback that we saw last week. This is, I think, a significant factor in the rebound we saw right across the gold mining sector. But the much bigger point here is that when we think about the value represented by gold miners at the current price, there's a really sound argument. The fact is that Barrick Gold has got an all-in sustaining price of $975. The price of gold today is at about $1,900 and change, so Barrick is potentially has the ability to make $1,000 an ounce in profits. Now, obviously, that isn't the kind of spread that you can see in just any sector. But then, of course, we have the additional point that copper prices are also rallying. And copper is a significant byproduct of a lot of gold mines. So that's an additional tailwind for the gold mining sector. Oil prices they've certainly recovered from their lows, but they're approximately 50% below where they were at the end of 2018. And even then, they spent the vast majority of 2019 at higher than $60. So we've had a very meaningful pullback. That's very flattering to the cost profile of most miners because energy is such a massive component of their cost basis. So that's also flattering the returns for miners. Now, the other point, of course, is that miners are obviously mining something and then that needs to be replaced. They're not investing in new mines. That means that most of the money is going to free cash flow. So this is exactly the time when gold miners and miners generally should be doing better. Of course, what it also contributes to when you've got a low all-in sustaining price and low energy prices, it means that companies that would normally have gone bust get to survive a little longer. So that does hold out the potential that there will be a supply response. But then we have the question of demand. And demand, particularly from ETFs, really does remain quite robust. So we did have a little pause over the last week and it was down a little bit more in here today, but this is still a very clear uptrend going from approximately 82.5 million ounces to 108 in the space of this year alone is a really quite significant addition. I continue to think that it is quite easy or to anticipate that by the time this gold market has eventually ended, that ETF holdings of gold will be the largest holding. Right now, it's the second largest holding. It's overtaken both Germany and the IMF. And the only other major holder of gold larger than ETFs is the US government. And I would anticipate that there is very little limit on the amount and the degree of demand for ETF holdings. So there is the clear scope that we're going to continue to see a medium-term bull market in gold against a background where there is just active devaluations of currencies. Then there was an interesting news story about black silicon in here today and its use in solar cells. The Invesco Solar ETF has now broken up and out of this long range. It did have a really nice pop on the upside in 2013 and gave up the whole thing in 2015-16. Since then, it has rebounded with a really in a really impressive fashion. But the really important point was that the renewable sector had already begun to decouple from the broad oil market at the end of last year. It was breaking out to new recovery highs in December and January, and it certainly got pegged back with the lockdowns and the crash that we had in March, but it subsequently rallied right straight and through the peaks from 2014 and 15. Well, there is the clear potential here that we are now at a juncture for solar and wind that we probably reached for electric cars a few years ago. There is a threshold when they're just good enough. And even though there is clearly the potential for them to get better, there is a Rubicon over which they eventually get where the technology is good enough to compete with conventional sources. And there is the real potential that with the changing tide of regulatory support for renewables, the obstacles that are being put in place to additional new investment in conventional oil, gas, coal, and then the technological progress that's being made, that we have already reached that point with renewables, and that they will continually start to take additional market share away from conventional fuels for the foreseeable future. And That is the and on top of that, we have got the 500 billion that Europe is spending and the proposed 2 trillion spending package from the USA. Well, these are obviously additional points that are helping to invigorate interest in renewables. And it's equally true of the wind sector. There are lots of subsidies around to increase the size of wind farms, and that is creating demand for wind turbines. So these are, I think, significant factors. Of course, the better that solar gets, the more compelling the argument is that we'll have an era of clean hydrogen, and not just burning cleanly, but also generating it cleanly. And hydrogen stocks continue to rebound from their respective trend means. So there is a clear bull market evolving in the renewables sector, and it is doing so independently of the oil market. An additional point is that there are a number of companies within the sector. And sorry, I haven't put the right one up. That are offering a way of achieving utility-like cash flows. Now, Sunrun has exploded on the upside, going from 20 and change just 2 months ago to almost $50. So it's overbought by any conception. But the reality is that they are quickly coming to dominate this installation of solar cells on homes. They offer at least the prospect of lowering utility bills, but then they capture those utility bills indefinitely. So, in a very low interest rate environment, this is the kind of business that prospers in a very real way because they can offer investors an outsized yield, in some cases a double-digit yield. And when you've got bond yields that are maybe right, but they're certainly nowhere near that. And the 10-year yield was in negative territory in here today. Now, the question is, what's going to happen with yields in the second or in the latter part of the year? We have got the clear trend higher in bond yields in China. So, and then you've got the fact that they are increasing liquidity. Food price inflation in China is taking off, and then they've got a recovering economy as well. There's the potential that if we're going to see inflation rising, then it's likely to occur in China first and then move throughout the world. If China were able to export deflation in the early part of this century, then perhaps they have the capability to export inflation in this decade. That is certainly something that we need to pay attention to. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.